driven by Briggs Auto Lane.
Let's have some fun. Let's go.
And BriggsAuto.com. Get in the game.
We're back for a shortened hour two of the game. We're out at 5:30. We'll have Mitch's Jabroni of the Week at 5:25 before we hand you off to the Kansas City Royals. Coming up here in this segment, we are going to debate, and I know this is basically flying in the face of what we just talked about last hour. We saw a ranking of Big 12 quarterbacks from the ESPN Big 12 blog. Jesse Ertz was fourth. He was behind Will Grier of West Virginia. We are going to debate the merits of that. We are somewhat on different sides of the aisle. Plus, I'm just trying to play devil's advocate. I think it'll be a good argument coming up. If you have questions or comments, shoot them to the game, KMAN. You can also call us 537-1350 or 866-776-1350. I do want to touch on this quickly to begin because we opened the show talking about Wesley Iwundu going to the NBA Draft Combine, which starts today. It runs through the rest of the week. If he were to get drafted, which as of right now, I mean, it seems like there is a decent enough chance. More of the mock drafts that I'm seeing now have him in the second round as opposed to the first. Draft Express, which is a, from what I could tell, I was texting people today that know more about the NBA than I. That seems to be a pretty reputable mock draft. They have him going in the second round. And when you're a college player and you're getting mocked in the second round, it's just, it's such a crapshoot with all the flyers that get taken on foreign guys in the NBA draft. Tough to know how assured he is of being drafted. But going to the combine is a very positive sign, obviously. So Wes is certainly in the mix as far as that is concerned. By the way, I did get someone from Draft Express for the show tomorrow to talk about Wesley Iwundu's draft prospects. So we'll get more info as far as that is concerned. But one question I have is, if he does get drafted, does it help out the program much? I mean, I think in some ways, that sounds like a dumb question. Of course, for the program's sake, you would love to have a player drafted. It is not going to hurt, certainly, to have a player drafted. But does the program really get much run out of that? And part of the reason I ask it is because we just spent 2 weeks ago a considerable amount of time discussing on the show just how good the draft streak is for the K-State football program. And I have said over and over again, like, I think that is perhaps the best thing that they have in their back pocket when they're going out and recruiting players, saying we got the longest streak in the Big 12 of having a player drafted. You come here, we know how to get you ready for the NFL. There is no doubt about that. It's much tougher to maintain consistency in putting guys in the NBA draft. I mean, simply there's fewer rounds. There is more of a foreign flair there. It's a tougher thing to do for a number of reasons. But would being able to put Wesley Iwundu in the NBA do much in regards to helping the program?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't think that it gains enough headlines. I mean, it's a guy going in the NBA draft, and it's great, and it's something that the coaches will be able to share with recruits that they took a guy that was kind of a misfit when he got to K-State and were able to mold him enough to get him into the NBA, and that's nice, but ultimately I don't think that a recruit is going to say yes or no based on one guy getting to the NBA, and I don't feel like casual basketball fans or casual K-State basketball fans are going to be sold on the program's direction or either of that one way or another just because one guy had his name called in what you mentioned is just a crapshoot second round of the NBA draft.
Yeah, and it's somewhat uncharted territory for the program because even under Frank Martin, there was just not a whole lot of NBA draft picks. I mean, there were two in 1 year. It was Michael Beasley, Bill Walker, and that was it. Now, I got some enjoyment out of watching those guys in the NBA when their careers were starting, but it didn't really seem like they had success. They continued to have success, but I didn't take that, hey, they were having success because it was a selling point to recruits that Michael Beasley and Bill Walker were both in the NBA and they're K-State guys. I never really got the vibe that it helped all that much then, and Michael Beasley was much more high profile. Bill Walker was playing for like the Celtics and Knicks, some high profile teams in the NBA. I just never got the vibe that it did that much because it was 1 year in the Frank Martin era. There was not a proven track record where you could say, hey, we regularly put guys in the NBA draft. It was two guys recruited by Bob Huggins, not even Frank Martin, who made it to the NBA. So I would equate that here and agree with you for the most part that, you know, until it happens a couple times, if there are multiple guys that go through the program for 3 or 4 years and make it to the NBA. I know someone may be screaming Ronnie Magruder out there at me. I mean, that he spent 3 years under Frank Martin, one under Bruce Weber, and then had to work his butt off for 3 or 4 years to get to the NBA from that point. I just put so much of that on Ronnie Magruder and the work that he did to get to the NBA that I wouldn't really credit it with either coach necessarily. So long story short, I fall about the same place you do. Maybe it helps him with one specific kid if there is a Wesley Iwundu type of guy you're recruiting. Maybe use that as a selling point. Look what we did to him. But I'm not sure that over the long haul it makes too much of a difference.
I think that it's more significant, it's more marketable just to get guys to the NFL when you're talking about football, and it's more marketable to make guys stars instead of just getting them to the NBA when you're talking about basketball. I think that if you look at, you know, Kansas and being able to connect the dots from having a guy like Paul Pierce and then connect that through the years to Andrew Wiggins and some of the other guys that are having success now that are at the top of their game and are really marketable in the sport is more significant than someone who gets drafted and then may or may not be a bench warmer or a D-League player for a lot of their basketball career.
Yeah, the dynamics in basketball are different in college basketball because of, you know, fewer rounds, fewer players, just tougher, the foreign guys, tougher to have any kind of consistency with that. The Kansases of the world will, Kentucky will, Duke will. But once you get to about, I don't know, 6 or 7 on that list of the best programs in the country, a big drop-off, and there's just not too much offhand that I can think of that separates everybody else. So you're just in the same boat, basically. There's a monopoly on being NBA factories in college basketball. It's different in college football. Speaking of college football, this is something we've been holding off on for a few days, but you know, normally I'm not as keen anymore on just debating somebody else's rankings here, but you feel pretty strongly about this. It was the post-spring quarterback rankings in the Big 12 from the Big 12 bloggers. They have, as you would probably expect, Baker Mayfield number one, Oklahoma number one, Oklahoma State number two, Mason Rudolph. Then number three is about where you'd, I think most people would expect Jesse Ertz to come in. Instead, they have West Virginia because of Florida transfer Will Grier at number three. Now, I am playing devil's advocate to an extent here, but I think I understand their reasoning more so than you do. So, with all due respect, I will give you the floor.
Well, again, it's a ranking. It's by the Big 12 blog. It's not a huge deal, but it is something that I think does show a little bit of disrespect for Jesse Ertz, because let's start by talking about Will Grier. He's played 6 games in his collegiate career. All 6 of those were in 2015 because he was suspended all of last year. 2 of those games were against New Mexico State and East Carolina. Then he played 4 conference games, which were not against very good teams. They were against Tennessee, Missouri, Kentucky, and Ole Miss. The best of those four, the best team of those four was Ole Miss, who went 10-3 that year, and they were 100th in the country in pass defense. If you want to look at his actual numbers, I mean, I was basically summarizing it by looking at QBR. In 2 out of the 6 games that he played in that 2015 season, he had a QBR of 75+, which is what you would look at to be the benchmark for, you know, being a solid quarterback. Jesse Ertz had 75+ in 9 out of his 13 games last year. And again, that was last year, and he also finished the year extremely well. A lot of those games that he did not play as well were early in the year against Stanford and West Virginia, et cetera. So I just think that Will Grier is probably the more talented quarterback, and clearly coming out of high school, he was one of the most touted names in the country. But let's throw a bone to the guy that's actually proven it on this stage in this conference before. Give it to Jesse Ertz being, at the very worst, the 3rd best quarterback in the Big 12.
Well, I would say first and foremost, I love Jesse Ertz, and specifically for K-State. He's great. No matter where anybody is going to rank him, I think he's going to be a very effective quarterback next year. I will say it doesn't shock me to see this because of a lot of what you said. I mean, Grier is a sexier name nationally because he does have the pedigree of being a 4-star recruit. Jesse Ertz, just a 2-star kid from Iowa that didn't really have any other offers. Grier had multiple SEC offers. West Virginia, in and of itself, sexier offense. We're talking a lot about sex appeal here for football, but West Virginia is the more fun, exciting offense. They're going to throw the ball down the field. They've had Geno Smith, Tavon Austin, guys roll through there that were big names. And really, he's more top of mind right now anyway, because when we're grasping at straws in spring football to find some kind of excitement in it, Will Grier actually played in spring football, and he was really impressive in the West Virginia spring game, 12 of 18, 202 yards. Jesse Ertz did not play this spring. So out of sight, out of mind, I think is a factor there as well. Now, if we're talking about actual merits of this discussion, again, I love Jesse Ertz, but I can understand the case for Will Grier, and part of it is because, well, you mentioned, rightfully so, that Will Grier only has 6 games starting experience as a quarterback at Florida and put up some pretty good numbers against mediocre competition. I mean, we only really have 7 games of Jesse Ertz being the quarterback that we presume him to be right now. Lest we forget, I mean, it's easy to forget with the way they finished the season, just how trying the first 6 games of last year were. When they go 3-3, Jesse Ertz through the first 6 games and completed under 50% of his passes. He was averaging only 126 yards a game through the air, under 50 yards rushing per game. The team was 3-3. He had been hurt some. I mean, it was not a great first 6 games of the year for Jesse Ertz. Then he gradually started to get better and better throughout the year. Even still, he never had more than 240 total yards in a game until the very last 2 games of the year, which is what cemented us feeling good about Jesse Ertz coming into this year. He dominated TCU, and then he went in and played a very impressive game against a good Texas A&M team in the Texas Bowl, and those were the games where he really broke out. He was on the cusp of it with the 4 games before that, and then he just breaks through with the last 2. So there's a fairly small sample size with Jesse Ertz as well that we're prognosticating out what he is going to be next year. There are a lot of merits for that because of what Bill Snyder quarterbacks in year 2 as a starter have done. So we have a history and a track record there. I understand why people think that, and I think that, by the way. I think he will be very good. But if you're going to make a case, I could see how you say, well, both of these guys really are pretty green as far as their starting experience in college football. And, I mean, the other thing that you got to keep in mind with Jesse Ertz, he is injury prone. He's had 2 major knee surgeries. He missed time in multiple games last year. He's been injury prone. And with the offense K-State runs, you know he's going to have to run the football. You worry about that again. So I'm just saying, I think there's more of a case there than perhaps you would think on the surface.
It's fair, and I don't love citing QBR for a lot of stuff because you know how I feel about ESPN coming up with their own computer rankings for stuff like this. But when it comes to Jesse Ertz, you kind of have to because QBR factors in a quarterback's rushing ability in a way that obviously passer rating won't. So you have to look at that a little bit. And I was just looking at this yesterday. Jesse Ertz, among Power 5 quarterbacks that are returning this year, Jesse Ertz had the 7th best total QBR of any Power 5 quarterback last year. And that's factoring in the first 6 games that he didn't play very well. He just played so well down the stretch that he actually finished 15th nationally in QBR last year, and he's the 7th best returning Power 5 quarterback. So if you've got that going for you, I think that you've earned a little bit of benefit of the doubt against a guy that we have not seen play, and it's going to be almost 2 calendar years since he would have taken a snap in an actual game when West Virginia season actually starts.
It's fair. I understand, and I think there are good arguments on either side. We're splitting hairs about whether or not he's the 3rd or 4th best quarterback.
Right.
I mean, he's going to be good, but this is the type of thing that happens in the summer. I'll tell you this, though. I know this much. This is why I take the position I did, defending Will Grier. Man, the guy got popped for PEDs. He knows you got to bend the rules to get ahead. He's my guy. My kind of guy. Will Grier.
Wait, he's your kind of guy or he's your guy? There's a huge difference between those two.
Well, if you follow the my guy trend here, you would want him to be my guy because that would mean, I don't know, he's going to flunk out. He'll be out of there. He'll transfer in a year. He'll be done. He's
actually
not going to have success.
I did not realize until reading that blog, but he has not been cleared by the NCAA to play this season yet. West Virginia is assuming that he will be, but that has not yet happened.
Jabroni of the Week is next.